So, what are the salient features? GST is designed to overcome the problems discussed earlier and to cater the overall need of the business and economy as a whole. I remember, since I worked for a number of multinationals, it used to be difficult to explain to our principals how the taxations were applied. It was very, very complex. One example that I gave was, you know, that how we, if we had to sell the material to, Mumbai, we had to, compute the tax in a very complex way. The other thing was on imports. Even in imports, there were a plethora of taxes, and it was such a complex working that few people knew exactly how to calculate the landed cost or the cost to company when you were importing the goods. Now, all this has been simplified. So, GST is applicable on supply of goods or services. So, this we have already said that it encompasses not only goods, but also every kind of service. GST is based on the principle of destination-based consumption taxation. So, we have also seen that the state where the consumption happens, they are the ones who are benefited in GST. So, a state which consumes the largest proportion gets benefited. In the earlier case, yes, the VAT did benefit the state where the consumption was happening. But excise used to be based more on the manufacturing. That means where the goods are being manufactured. It's a dual GST with the center and the states simultaneously levying in on a common base. The taxes levied by the center would be called as the central GST or CGST. And the taxes levied by the state, including the union territories with legislation, would be called the state GST. Union territories without legislation would levy union territory tax, also known as UTGST. Let me just explain this to you. So, when you are selling the goods within the state, so let us say that I'm in Maharashtra and I'm selling it to another a buyer in Maharashtra, I have to pay the CGST, which is the central government component or central government GST, and also I have to pay the SGST, which is the state GST. Now, there are some union territories like Delhi, like Goa, which have a legislature. So, there they also pay SGST, that is the state GST. But there are certain union territories which do not have a legislature, and which are the ones? So, you have Chandigarh, you have Dadra Nagar Haveli, and Andaman Nicobar. So, all these people, they have to apply the UTGST, which is the Union Territory GST. And mind you, UTGST is exactly like SGST. It's only that the administration is not done by the state. These are being administered by the center. But the mechanism is the same. So, if you're selling within the union territory, you will be paying two taxes. You will be paying a central GST and you will be paying a union territory GST. And generally, we will see this as we go forward, that there are four slabs of GST, 5%, 12%, 18% and 28%. So, whenever there is a sale which is intrastate, that means within the state, there the GST is split equally between CGST and SGST or UTGST, depending upon whether it is a state or it's a union territory. So, for example, if there is a commodity which attracts 5% GST, then the CGST will be 2.5% and the SGST or UTGST will be 2.5%. So, it will be 2.5 plus 2.5, both making it 5%. Same is the case if it is 12%, it will be 6 plus 6. If it is 18%, it is 9 plus 9. And we'll see that in some of the slides as we go along. An integrated GST or integrated tax, what we call as IGST, is levied on interstate supply of goods or services and is applicable on supply of goods or services. So here, when you are supplying intrastate, interstate. So intrastate is when you are selling within the state, and interstate is when you are selling from one state to another state. So here you don't need to split the GST as we were doing in the case of intrastate. So you don't need to split the CGST and the SGST. You are paying the GST under one single head, which is called as the IGST. So here IGST would be paid at the rate of 5%, 12%, 18% or 28% as applicable. Import of goods is treated as interstate supplies and is subjected to IGST in addition to applicable custom duty. So generally, in case of imports, you are applying the basic custom duty, also known as the countervailing duty. So this basic custom duty, plus there is a cess which is applied. The cess is 10% of the basic custom duty, and you arrive at the taxable rate. And on this taxable rate, the IGST is applied. Benefit of this is, since IGST is VATable, or you get a set off, you can get a credit. It's really not a cost. So suppose I am a trader and I am importing a material, then the custom duty is certainly a cost to me, but the IGST which is paid on the goods, I can take a credit the moment I take the goods in my warehouse. When I sell the goods, then depending upon the value of the goods or the selling price, I have to pay the GST on it. Depending upon whether I'm selling it within the state, that's intrastate, or I'm selling it outside the state, which is a interstate transaction. Import of services is treated as interstate supplies and is subjected to IGST. So what we discussed for goods, that whenever goods are being imported, there is a IGST applied. Same is the principle here. So even on services, so let us say that you bought an equipment and you have an engineer coming from an overseas principal or the machine manufacturer who is going to come and commission the equipment, and they are going to raise an invoice for the services offered by the engineer. So in that case, on that service, there will be certain duties charged, custom duty charge, and on top of that, there will be a IGST which is charged. So we looked at the CGST, the SGST Union Territory GST, because in case of a state or a union territory which has a legislation, we apply SGST. But if it is a union territory without a legislature, then we applied the UTGST. And then the third one is when we are making an interstate sale, we are applying IGST. So these are applied at rates mutually agreed upon by the center and the states under the aegis of GST Council. So GST has replaced following taxes earlier levied by the center. So there was the central excise duty. There was duties of excise on medicinal and toilet preparations. There were additional duty of excise, that's goods of special importance. Then GST has this is a continuation. So additional duty of excise on textile and textile products, and additional duty of custom, which was also known as CVD, countervailing duty. So all these have now been club into GST. One small correction. I mentioned that basic custom duty was known as CVD. Sorry, that's not the case. Basic custom duty continues to remain as basic custom duty, But CVD was the equivalent of an excise duty, which was being charged in the custom duty computation. So this is a small correction. So what are the salient features again? So GST has replaced following taxes. We already saw a list. Special additional duty of custom. Now this was also one of the duty which used to be applied on imported goods. And SAD used to be the counter duty of sales tax. So like we saw that countervailing duty was a form of excise duty, and SAD was a form of sales tax. It used to be applied at the rate of 4%. Then you have the service tax, then you have the cesses and surcharges, because there were, even in customs, there were certain primary education cess and secondary education cess, and there were certain surcharges also applied. So all these have now been consolidated into the GST. So we also come to some of the state taxes, which are now subsumed. You know, covered under the GST. So one, you have the state VAT, the central sales tax. So we talked about, you know, the state VAT, what we call as the Maharashtra sales tax or the Maharashtra VAT. Then the central sales tax, CST, purchase tax, because there were certain goods on which purchase tax had to be paid, luxury tax, entry tax. Entry tax is nothing but octroi or LBT, local body tax as they call it, entertainment tax, except those levied by the local bodies, taxes on advertisements, taxes on lotteries, betting, gambling, state cesses and surcharges insofar as they are related to supply of goods or services. So GST is applicable to all goods and services except alcohol for human consumption. So that means alcohol for industrial use is not exempted. But alcohol for human consumption is not part of the GST. It still falls under the state excise and it still attracts VAT. Okay, these have been deliberately kept out. And not only this, but even some of the petroleum products, which we will just see. So GST on 5 specified petroleum products, which is the crude or what we call as a crude oil, petrol, diesel, aviation turbine fuel, and natural gas. So these are still not under the GST gambit, and these are still under the excise and VAT regime. And a date will be announced or recommended by the GST council when these also will become part of the GST regime. Tobacco and tobacco products would be subjected to GST. In addition, the center would continue to levy central excise duty. So this is one of the products which we talked about, because the government found that after the GST was implemented, the effective tax collection on some of the items had drastically fallen. And to correct that, so they have also kept the central excise duty on tobacco. So you have the GST and also the central excise on the tobacco and the tobacco products. The list of exempted goods and services is harmonized for the center and the states, as well as across states as possible. So the goods, the classification of the goods, the duties, the GST percentages which will be charged on the goods, these have been harmonized across the nation. So all exports and supplies to SEZs and SEZ units are zero rated. So, I mean, this is a incentive which is given by the government that whenever you are exporting the goods, they are not subjected to any duties. So earlier also, excise was exempted, the sales tax was exempted. So as even now, GST is exempted here. So even there are provisions that if GST has been already paid on the inputs which are actually bought by the SEZ, then they have certain mechanism by which they can get a refund of these duties. But they are, supposed to give certain forms to the supplier so that the supplier can actually supply goods without charging GST. So it will be sold purely on the basis of the basic price. So suppose 100 rupee is your selling price, there will be no additional taxes charged on it if it's being sold to a SEZ and they can supply this material. Input tax credit. So also known as ITC, but not to be confused with the corporate entity ITC. So input tax credit is available in respect of taxes paid on any supply of goods or services or both. So we saw this, that in the entire value chain at every stage, you are able to take tax credit of the taxes or the GST which is paid by your supplier. Likewise, when you are selling the goods, your buyer, so here you are the seller, and whatever taxes you pay, your buyer will be able to take the tax credit, and he'll be able to take 100% tax credit. But of course, there are riders. I mean, having said this, the goods have to be related to the business. And one example that I will give you, one of the companies that I worked for, they, leased cars. So when you are, paying the lease, tax is applicable and GST is applicable on the car lease amount. Now, you are, the company is paying the lease amount and the GST on it, but the current act or the law does not allow the company to take credit of the GST amount. And mind you, it's very high. It's 28% on leased cars. Why? Because it is not directly related to the business. It's a facility given to the employees. So the company is giving leased car to the employees for, performing their duty or coming to the office or visiting the customers or whatever. So it's not a blanket thing. So, the input tax credit is available only if the activity is related to your business. So if you're buying certain things, there are various other things. For example, if you're buying, let's say, Diwali sweets, or you're giving a gift to the employees and tax has been paid on it, you will not be allowed to take credit on it. So one has to check whenever you are buying something, whether input tax credit, are you allowed to take it or not? If you do so, and suppose at a later date during the audit they find that you have taken a credit which you are not entitled to, then you will be subjected to paying the differential amount, or whatever credit you have taken, plus the interest on it from the date you have taken credit till the time you make the payment, plus certain penalties. So one has to be very careful to evaluate whether the input tax credit can be availed or not. And for that, one has to know how does the activity or your purchase or the input tax credit fit into your business. Electronic filing of returns by different class of persons at different cutoff dates. So depending upon the size of the business and the turnover of the business, there are certain timetables which are given, or cutoff dates which are given. So for large businesses, they are supposed to file the returns on a monthly basis. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it is 50 crores. So if your annual turnover is 50 crores or more, then you have to file the returns every month. But if your turnover is less, let us say that you have a turnover of say about 5 crore per annum, then you have a provision where you can file the return every quarter. So there are some concessions given depending upon the size of the business, mainly in terms of the turnover. Various modes of payment of taxes available to the taxpayer. So you can pay the GST to the government through a bank, over the counter, or you can pay it by NEFT, or you can pay it by RTGS. I believe that they are also going to start, you can make the payment through a credit card or a debit card. I'm not sure whether this system has been started, but the intention is that the government is going to allow. So even the small business can actually pay, instead of net banking, etc., they can even pay it by a credit or a debit card. System of self-assessment of the taxes payable. So this system is mainly driven by the registered dealers. That means anybody who is registered with the GST system, they have to self-assess. You can actually declare what are the purchases that you have got, what are the credits due to you, and how much have you sold, and what are the duties payable on it. And you can actually sum it up and continue to use the credit. Only at the end of the month, when you find that, let us say that your liability, tax liability, is greater than the credit that you have taken, you will have to pay the amount. And we talked about the various payment methods which are available. So it's a system where it is self-driven. That means the registered dealers have to comply on their own. Of course, there are audits of the registered person. So whoever has registered with GST, they will be audited at certain intervals. And the interval is again decided based on the turnover that you have. So large companies having large turnover will have frequent audits, or they will have a compulsory audit, and the smaller companies may have a audit which may be, once in a year, or sometimes it can be once in 2 years or so. Let's come to the GST model. So GST is basically a progressive tax, which is consumption type, allowing full and immediate credit for both current and capital inputs attributable to taxable supplies. That's a very, very comprehensive statement. So it's a progressive tax. We saw that why it is progressive, because it has replaced many, many taxes, and made it very simple by just having three or four types of GST. And it's a consumption type of a tax. So that means the person who is going to consume, he is the one who is going to ultimately bear the tax, allowing full and immediate credit for both current and capital inputs. So when you say current inputs, means it could be your raw material, your utilities, your consumables, and capital inputs could be in the form of, capital equipment, machines, which have a longer life. So you can take credit on all. In the earlier regime, in case of excise, capital inputs was very cumbersome, and there were a lot of restrictions. You could not take the entire amount credit at once. You had to take it in phases. A certain kind of equipment, the credit was not allowed. Now here in GST, this has been highly simplified. So if you buy equipment, the moment you take the equipment in your premises, you can take the credit of the taxes which have been paid on the equipment. GST is a destination based, that is the tax levied on the basis of the place of consumption of the goods and services, not the place of production. So we saw this, that excise used to be based on the place of production, whereas here the GST is based on the place of consumption. So wherever the end consumer is, because why we say end consumer? Suppose a trader is going to buy the goods, then the tax is going to be lying in abeyance in his account. And the moment he sells the material, it can be within the same state or in a different state, the tax will be transferred, because he pays the tax and the credit will be taken by the buyer. Okay, so here this is one of the major change as far as GST is concerned. Under this system, credit for the input taxes are allowed on the basis of invoices issued by the vendors registered for the tax. So the vendors have to be registered for the tax. So if you have a vendor who is not GST registered, then he will not be paying the GST. Now it could be that it's a very small company who doesn't fall under the purview of GST, because there are certain limits set, you know, like if your annual turnover is less than 5 crores or so, then you don't need to register for GST. So in such a case, you will not be allowed to take credit. But there are certain other provisions, like there is something called as a reverse charge mechanism, where in such cases, you will have to pay the duty, you will have to show that you bought the material from an unregistered dealer, and then you can take an input tax credit. So again, it doesn't become a cost to you, but you have to pay the duty at least on paper, and then immediately take credit when you are showing receipt of the goods. Goods and Services Tax Council, that is GSTC, was constituted comprising the Union Finance Minister, the Ministers of States, that's the Revenue, and the State Finance Minister. So this is how the GST Council has been constituted. And what do they do? So they recommend on the GST rate. So finalization of the GST rate, you know, initially, what will the taxes be? You know, what we have seen, that there is something called as an exempted category, which is the zero tax. Then you have the 5%, 12%, 18%, and 28%. So these were decided by the GST Council. And currently, now that the slabs have been fixed, the GST Council also decides certain commodities whenever any new things come in, right? Which category they will fall under. So whether they will fall under 12%, 18%, or 28%. So they also look at the exemption, which are the items which need to be exempted, and the threshold, taxes to be subsumed, and other features. So any taxes which need to be subsumed into GST, that is also decided. So this exercise was already done before the implementation of GST on 1st July 2017. But this activity continues for any new kind of material, because as we know, today you have the electric vehicles, etc., and you will have so many new components which are coming in. So whenever there is any request for a new classification or exemptions, etc., then they will be taken up by the GST Council. This mechanism would ensure some degree of harmonization on different aspects of GST between the center and the states, as well as across the states. So by doing this, by the GST Council and the common discussion that they have, they ensure that there is a uniform practice which is implemented across the states nationally. The Goods and Service Tax Council designed the framework of GST after a series of extensive discussion, and it was decided that there will be four tax rates, namely 5%, 12%, 18%, and 28%. The tax rate for different goods and services are finalized and notified. So naturally, in the month of June 2017, they had actually given out the final list of the goods, various classifications, and what rate they will be taxed under, and even the exemption, etc., were notified. The Goods and Service Tax Council designed the framework of GST after a series of extensive discussion. I'm sorry, this is a repeat. So besides, some goods and services are under the list of exempt items. So based on their, importance, they are being, necessity items, or they come from a certain segment of the society which need not be taxed or is difficult to be taxed, based on that, certain exemptions have been defined. the list of exempted services has been finalized. So there is a list of exempted goods and there are a list of exempted services. So these were finalized. Rate for precious metals is an exception to four tax slab. So, you know, there were difficulties in classifying everything under these four slabs which were done. So there were certain exceptions made, and one of the exceptions done was for precious metals, where it was fixed at 3%. Partly because, you know, precious metals, they already have a very high value. So even a small change, for example, even if you put them under 5% category, the tax implication can be very, very high. And if you keep the taxes very high, then people will tend to, cheat, or, you know, they will try to evade the taxes. So this is also to ensure compliance with the tax regime. Assess over the peak rate of 28% on certain specified luxury and demerit goods like tobacco and tobacco products, etc. So we talked about, certain products after the GST implementation, the rates suddenly fell. You know, the total taxation rates suddenly fell, and the government had to hastily put in either additional cess or they had to also impose the central excise. One of the item was automobiles. So even in cars, there are a varying degree of cess for the small cars like hatchbacks and, you know, the compact sedans, etc. And then there are higher cess on cars, you know, which are the luxury segment, etc., like SUVs. So this was done to actually bring some parity, between the earlier regime and the new regime. So you can imagine, once you consolidate all the taxes, now you know that on cars, etc., the kind of taxes you were paying was in excess of 28%. The list of goods and services in case of which a reverse charge would be applicable has also been finalized. So we talked about the reverse charge mechanism. So in reverse charge mechanism, if you're buying from an unregistered dealer, you have to show that these goods, I have bought it from an unregistered dealer. You have to, in reverse charge, actually first pay the duty and then you take a input tax credit on it. So as far as the buyer is concerned, there is no disadvantage to him. But this is one way the government also tracks, you know, what is the kind of a sale the unregistered dealer is doing. So if you find that he is making a sale which is beyond the exemption limit given for people who did not register with GST, they will come under the purview of GST. So one of the services which is under the reverse charge mechanism is the transportation cost. So today, suppose you are transporting, you know, your products from one place to another, and the transporter is charging you, let's say, 30,000-40,000 rupees, then he is not paying GST, but you are supposed to pay the GST and take a credit for it under the reverse charge mechanism. So the freight costs and the purchases from unregistered dealers, they fall under the reverse charge mechanism. The five laws, namely CGST law, GST law, IGST law, SGST law, and GST compensation laws, are recommended. So they have defined laws for each of these five types or bifurcation of the GST. Because each one has a slightly different treatment, even how you can take credit, which credit can be used for use of your, removal of goods. So, like, for example, I have a credit of CGST, SGST, IGST in my kitty. So I, as a manufacturer, have been buying raw material and taking tax credit, correct? I can only use certain credits for my local sale. Like for example, I can use the IGST when I'm using it for the interstate transactions. I cannot use CGST. So there are certain limitations, and all these limitations, all the conditions are defined by these individual laws. Formula and mechanism for GST compensation cess is also finalized. It's a self-explanatory statement. In order to ensure single interface, all administrative control, over 90% of taxpayers having turnover below 1.5 crore vests with the state tax administration. Further, all administrative control over taxpayers having a turnover above 1.5 crore is divided equally in the ratio of 50% each for the central and the state tax administration. So what has happened is that with the implementation of GST, you had CST officials, you had the MST or the VAT officials, you had the excise officials. So all these resources were combined together and they were made into a resource, a GST resource. Now, as we saw that you still have, when you make a sale, which is a intrastate sale, we are paying CGST and SGST separately. Or even in union territory, we are paying CGST and UTGST separately. So there are bifurcations in terms of central GST staff and state GST staff. And here the effort is to bifurcate the taxpayers based on their turnover. So all the people who are below 1.5 crore, they are handled by the state GST staff, and all those who are above 1.5 crore up to a certain limit, they are divided between the state and the center. So you are answerable only to one of the authorities, either the state or the center, which will basically administer all the GSTs. That means the CGST, SGST and the IGST. So this is a more of a administrative step. Powers under the IGST Act shall also be cross-empowered on the basis as under CGST and SGST Act, with few exceptions. So here also the powers are given to both CGST and SGST based on certain criteria. Power to collect GST in territorial waters shall be delegated by central government to the states. So even, you know, there are certain commercial activities which are carried out, you know, like it could be the shipping, could be passenger vessels. So GST will be payable in such cases. So for territorial waters, the tax collection will be done by the states. So it has been delegated by the central government to the states. Just a clarification. So at a broad conceptual level, this model has a lot to commend itself, naturally, because there is a lot of simplicity, there's a lot of clarity in the way this model has been defined. It strikes a good balance between fiscal autonomy of the center and the states and the need for harmonization. We have seen how the harmonization has been done in terms of classification, in terms of the category of goods and how they will be taxed, which is we will come to a little later, based on the HSN code or SSE code. And it empowers both the levels of the government to apply the tax to a comprehensive base of goods and services at all points in the supply chain. So also in the supply chain, there is no step where the GST is not applicable. So that means there is no leakage as far as the government is concerned. So it also eliminates tax cascading which occurs because of the truncated or partial application of the center and state taxes. So earlier we have seen that when there was excise and then there was a sales tax, there was cascading effect. There were certain implications when there is a interstate transaction, you are applying tax on tax. So all these has been eliminated now, because at every stage you are getting a complete credit of the tax paid by your supplier. So there is no cascading which happens in case of GST. Thank you.